Hello and welcome to another episode of the Construction Corner Podcast. I'm Dylan, I'm your host, joined, recently, not always, but joined today by my blue-collar badass, Matt. What is going on, my friend?
What's up, Dylan? Man, we keep doing this. It seems like it's been months since we recorded a dual episode, but such is the life, right?
Yeah, I mean, I was down in Cabo for New Year's and getting away from 3.5 feet of snow and 9 days without power, which I think we skipped out on 4 of those days that we didn't have power. I think in our little town, there's probably 100 trees that are down and like full 80-foot like sugar pines just toppled.
Wow. Are they still down or they've been cleaned up?
They're still down. Like it's... Wow. It's a disaster zone. Like even on our little lot, like 5 trees just either snapped or toppled. And then like our neighbors who they're selling, like they got a bunch of trees that I had to cut up because they were across our driveway. And
just from snow weight.
Yeah. I mean, part of it is snow weight. Part of it was like, we've been dry for so long and then it rained a bunch and then they got snowed on. So then all the weight between the snow, the water that they just got,
oversaturated.
Yeah. And I mean, some of them, like you'd see oaks, like either they just completely toppled or like sugar pines, they completely toppled or they just split, right? Where like half the tree breaks or they'll lose like a part of themselves, right? They'll shed a branch or whatever to try to keep the rest of it intact. But it was intense, man. For like a week, it was just like an apocalypse here in the snow.
Wow. So you had to leave town, or you didn't have to, but you left town on vacation while your house was still dark?
Yeah. Yeah.
How was that?
Well, so luckily we have like a little propane like wall heater that does not need electricity. So we could at least have, 50 degrees in the house and not have to worry about pipes freezing.
Yeah.
And then, we had to do the whole thing of like getting the dogs to other people's places, to get the chickens elsewhere, to get, food put in other people's freezers for a week.
Oh, man.
All that kind of good stuff. So, yeah, I mean, heck, I mean, the middle, like basically, if you're not in Florida, you deal with this, every year of, hopefully not power outage, but, you probably lose power once and, a day's not bad. 9's a little rough, but
that's brutal, man. That's brutal. How widespread was it?
It was really just like our area, like our town and up the mountain. I mean, just like, again, in our little town of 2,500 people, I get probably 100 trees were down. Like,
wow.
4 or 5 full trees fell into like the lake, which again, to clean up a 80-foot sugar pine out of the water and pull it all out, like it's a big effort to do that. So a lot of people are still trying to just get their house back in order, roofs got caved in and all that kind of stuff too. So
not fun.
No, it's great for the plow guys, it's great for the tree guys, it's great for the handyman guys and fixing a bunch of roofs and doing a bunch of tree work and all that kind of stuff. Like my neighbor, he had one branch fall. It one branch on his entire lot fell, but it was from 80 feet up in a sugar pine, and it took out his power riser into his house. So the only thing that it could fall on, it fell on the worst possible thing. So now he's got to get, because the utility won't redo the like riser into your house because it ripped off his meter and everything.
Holy cow.
So he's got to get a contractor in to come and do the riser and all that stuff for the utility to reconnect it. So it's stuff like that, man, where, it's a great time to be a contractor, great time to be somebody that does some of these disaster restoration and, helping people to get out all this stuff.
Yeah, hopefully it's most of the legit guys out there, not the ambulance chaser handyman. We had a knock on wood. We had a nasty flood, a pipe burst in our house 2 or 3 years ago, and you know, me being a contractor, you'd think I would have just handled it. But at the time, just being naive, I didn't know I could go and take that insurance money and do it myself. And I was away at work anyways when it happened. And, you know, my wife called and I said, I don't know, let's call the insurance guy. And insurance guy sent over like SunGlow or one of those companies. And oh my God, man, it was an absolute utter nightmare just having these idiots in my, I mean, these are like the scurviest of the scurvy convicts, you know, they have to go back to jail at night and they're in my house for, it took them a month, 2 months maybe to fix everything. And it was, you know, I'm my own worst enemy. I'd come home at the end of the day and go and inspect their work. And I would just go and raise holy hell because, you know, it looked like some crappy 2-bit residential hack did it. And here I am thinking it's going to be, you know, great quality. And that's what I'm demanding. And it was an absolute nightmare. So word to the wise, if you ever have something like that happen, you are allowed to take that money and go bid out the work yourself and do it yourself.
I mean, that's a great point, man. Like, you know, there's a lot of like contractors, right? Like, especially in like roofing and stuff that deal with insurance companies all the time. And for most of us, like, you hope to never hear from the insurance guy, right? Yeah. That is the last call you want to make or get, right?
Yeah.
Claim on whatever's going on. So let's make a hard right. We're going to make a hard transition here into the world of big construction. So as you brought to my attention, there's which we've been talking about for the last year on this in particular. I remember last January with your 40-week lead times for this material in particular. And for those of you that are new to the show, it is steel, and especially dimensional steel. But U.S. Steel and Nucor have announced building new plants, both, or at least U.S. Steel's is $3 billion that they're going to build in Arkansas. Nucor's right around there that they're going to build in West Virginia. But let's walk through this, man. Like, we've obviously been talking about this for a while. But what do we think this is? Good news, bad news? What's our take on it?
Well, you know, I think it's everything we've talked about in the last year, right? We had a massive steel problem that came to light over the last 12 to 18 months, kind of coincided with COVID. And there is no real fast, quick fix for it, you know, because you already said the numbers, like, these are $3 billion facilities. That's a massive investment, even for a hog like Nucor or U.S. Steel. And that's a ton of money. So I think overall it's a good thing. It shows that they've got confidence in the market stabilizing or, you know, not going completely to hell, because these things aren't even going to be online. They're going to start construction fairly soon, but they won't be online rolling steel until, I think I saw 2025. So it's a substantial, 2024 is U.S. Steel's. Even so, that's a substantial project and a huge investment on a futures market, right? So I think overall it's a good thing. I don't know. I have been paying closer attention to the commodities markets in the last 12 months than I ever have in my career. And, you know, steel's okay right now. It's still going up a little bit. I can tell you that lumber, while it tanked over the summer, it is skyrocketing back to where it was in the heart of the madness last year. So from that end, I'm really hoping that is not a global sign of things to come across the industry.
Yeah. I mean, even like reading through this article from ENR, you know, U.S. Steel, building the new mill, but they in 2019 purchased the 49% stake in Big River Steel. And then they just bought the rest of it in a year ago for $774 million for the remainder of their shares. So, I mean, they're investing $4 billion, U.S. Steel is, into, you know, additional plants, more for, obviously they're just going to suck up one, but another three in a new plant. Nucor doing the same thing, right? $2.7 billion, which we all know that's going to be at least three by the time it's said and done.
Yeah.
you know, and then the other thing that I really want to touch on, not only in them building, you know, these expansions and state-of-the-art mills and low carbon steel and all this stuff, which is good. And then, you know, state-of-the-art mini mills, which is what Nucor has been famous for, and being able to do a lot of things and do them quickly, really respond to markets timely, has been a big thing that Nucor has done over the years. And, you know, kudos to them for taking a lot of that stuff on with the mini mills. But the other thing that I really like to point out for a lot of this stuff is, like, they're building in Arkansas and West Virginia. Nucor's other big plants are in, like, Indiana. They're throughout the Midwest. And the thing that I really like to hit on, you know, having lived in the Midwest for 10 plus years, you know, you're in the Midwest, is the reason that they build most of those, and I've heard from Nucor guys in particular on this, is it's all work ethic. Like, that is why they build them in the Midwest. Obviously there's a lot in rural Pennsylvania, but for the most part, these facilities are in places where there is a known work ethic to the community. And that's where they put these plants. Just for what that's worth, I think it's a huge deal for their, you know, they're going to have 900 permanent jobs for, like, the U.S. steel mill, right? When it's built, they're going to have 3,500 people at Project Peak working on this thing. You know, they build communities when they put in a steel plant.
Absolutely, man. And it's cool to see, it's cool to learn, you know, to really look into that side of it. You know, I'd never even thought about that before. I've known obviously where the mills are located, but I mean, that is the blue collar badass, right? That's the mentality. And that's where they're centering around, where there's large populations of people who have the work ethic, who aren't afraid to get dirty, who go out and work hard. You know, it's cool to see. And they're certainly putting all their chips in on this, it would seem.
Yeah, or a large, you know, portion of them. Because, like, a lot of ones in, like, the one in Indiana is, it's between, like, Lafayette and Indy, kind of. It's, you know, you're not far from stuff, right? So Lafayette's where Purdue's at. And then Indy, like, you're not far from a lot of things, but at the same time, like, you're kind of on your own. And so, like, the Nucor plants, like, that's it, right? That's the thing that's there. And they build communities, they attract people, you know, they need, you know, from anywhere from engineers to maintenance guys to admin staff to payroll to finance to, you know, a lot of stuff, right? To run and operate these plants. And it, you know, again, for these new ones, 900 people at peak, right? So let's just say that that's one person from every household. So that's 900 homes, you know, times an average four people per household, you know, so you're at now 3,600 people, right, for this plant. And that's not including, like, anybody else that locates next to the plant for, like, rail or trucking or anything else to support the plant, plus the people that, you know, you could have a 5,000 person town pretty easily just off of this one plant.
Absolutely. I mean, all the, that's another good point. All the ancillary businesses and needs that go along with plants like this, it's huge. It goes with any industry, right? When Amazon moves into town, you know, you've got all the trucking companies, you've got all the competitors, you know, all the Targets and Walmarts and everyone else who's trying and, you know, fighting for dear life against Bezos, but it brings all of those companies together, whether they're fighting or friendly. And it can really build a community very fast. And Nucor, you know, for being the big faceless steel giant that they are doing a lot of this. They actually have another facility, a plate mill in Kentucky somewhere that's expected to open this year. That's another just less than $2 billion facility. It's good to see. It's good to see the industry. It's good to see us kind of reeling back and keeping it domestic also, because, you know, there are still other options, and we could get into the tariff conversation some other time. That could bore you to tears or make me throw things or both, but it's good to see investment like that on our soil, regardless of which area in the country they're putting it.
Yeah. And so here's one thing that I think most people probably don't know is going back and looking at steel. A lot of the competition for steel and mini mills in particular, right, doing sheet steel and other, like, rods and that kind of stuff and conduit, things like that, pipe steel, is a lot of that actually came from Brazil. came from South America, whereas where a lot of it and the mini mills really took off was in South America, because they could put these up pretty efficiently. They weren't so big to run a mini mill, you know, and then they could spread them out, you know, again, Brazil's a big place across the country to do stuff. So that was like one of the big competitors. Granted, China's got their own piece in that, but you know, it's a lot easier to ship stuff from Brazil to Miami than it is across the Pacific, you know? So there's stuff like that where bringing it back into the US for a lot of these productions, and US and Nucor hadn't done too much exterior to the US, but to see them putting big investment dollars within the US for not only for supply chain, but for, you know, jobs and everything else that comes from that. And really to see that basically all that's going to get absorbed domestically. You know, I don't think we export a whole bunch of steel. Most of that gets, you know, absorbed here in the US. So and we imported a ton of it. So to really see that coming back into the US is super cool and really going to be staying here. And they see, you know, for the next 5-10 years that we're going to absorb a ton of steel is pretty cool.
Yeah. A lot of tons of steel, no pun intended, but I mean, we have a huge deficit right now. That's why these lead times are still so stupid. I'm working with on a development locally here, and we are a licensed dealer / builder with one of the bigger domestic pre-engineered building companies. I won't say their name right now, but for a standard steel building kit, you know, which they'll cringe when I say this, but it's just a big damn erector set, right? Everything's it's pre-engineered. It's nothing fantastical. It's theoretically already been designed. It just needs to be put together. 54 weeks still. Now they have options. They have expedited options, but your options when you go that route are severely limited. I mean, you're talking square box, flat roof. You can't put in too many openings. You can't do this and that. So that doesn't help a ton. But anyways, this development I'm working with, the owner, you know, bless his soul, he started thinking outside of the box, and he contacted China. He contacted a steel manufacturer, a pre-engineered manufacturer in China. And so we've been working with them, and I don't know if it'll work out. It's in my world, it's scary as hell to even think about the logistics of this, but their numbers are coming back a third what the domestic guys are, and they can put it on a boat in less than a month. Now, I get it. It's probably going to take 3 months to float it across the ocean, and we got to deal with shipping and import tax, and then we got to get trucks to pick it up. And believe me, there's a whole litany of logistical nightmares that are going through my head. However, why can't we do the same? And you know, building new mills will help with that for sure. It'll boost production and boost domestic availability of raw goods. But it also seems like there's, you know, we're still sitting on our hands, you know, to some degree from the whole COVID nightmare, and people are still pointing fingers in both directions and not wanting to take responsibility. 54 weeks for a building kit is friggin' absurd. Absurd. I mean, that was the benefit of a pre-engineered building, right? Was it cost a little bit less, but you could get the damn thing fast, 2 months, and we could have steel, and we could be standing steel in 2 months. Now you're more than a year. The savings aren't really great, if at all, anymore. So it's just continues to be a weird time we live in.
So a lot of this too, like, it's hard to see the real numbers, right? I mean, this has always been people's gripes, and construction is transparency. It's real hard to come by, real hard to understand what's driving it, right? Is it a demand side thing, right? Where everybody needs a building and there's, you know, 1,000 people that want to shop out back and you can't get steel, right? Like, or 10,000 or however many people, right? We're in a country of 320 million people, 10,000 is not a big number. So like, out of that, right, how many people want that? And then, you know, where's the rest of the steel going, right? We've talked about Amazon and them building all their warehouses and doing trusses and that kind of stuff. And I mean, those are million square foot plus warehouses. They're putting up whatever, 30 of them, you know, that's 300 million square feet of stuff, right? And it's all, those are steel buildings. Like, they're all steel columns, steel trusses, rebar, right? Like, it's steel. It's steel and concrete is the only thing that really is in those buildings with a couple lights, maybe. Like, honestly, that's what's in those deals. So when you look at like the amount of steel being produced and absorbed by everything that's happening, I can see it on the demand side. Like, there's a lot of stuff going on. And then it's like, how do you navigate through it? And the whole thing with like change and everything else. But there's some of the, I can see both sides of it, right? I think we have a huge demand of stuff, which is really promising. It's kind of absurd that people are willing to pay more for things, or the astronomical prices, but they need them and they need it to operate. So, I mean, this also goes to showing people like the price elasticity in construction, right? That people can pay more for a building. And these prices are showing you that too.
Absolutely. And, you know, money's still free for the time being. But we're seeing a lot more calls for renovation work also in the last 6 months, certainly. So it's good on both sides, right? Because you're still getting the calls and the demand for new construction, but you got a whole nother subsect of developers, of investors who are looking to make moves, but maybe not on that scale because the pricing is so escalated for the most part. But you can buy a building right now and renovate it for, you know, pennies on the dollar compared to new construction. So that, I think it's good in both ways, because we're also now kind of cleaning up inventory. We got to a point where, you know, and even still, there really is nothing, no inventory left to speak of good buildings, right? So taking the older ones or taking the vacant that have been sitting and refabbing them, breathing new life into them and turning them into something, it's pretty cool for a lot of reasons. And it just helps contracting and builders on all different levels, from the really big guys down to the smallest of small.
Yeah. And in that, like, especially the steel's good, right? If the bones of those buildings are good, like the masonry, yeah, the steel, then you don't have, then you're dealing with lumber and internal stuff. And that's, you know, seems to be easier to get anyway.
Yeah. I mean, as long as you can always scrape the guts out, as long as the skeleton's still standing, we don't want to get into, you know, going about trying to restructure a building. That just becomes more of a headache than it's worth. Usually that's when I suggest just bulldoze it and let's just claim the lot, you know, the land is its own value. But, you know, the ones we're looking at are, you know, you wouldn't want to hang out inside them for too long right now, but structurally they're still pretty sound and they'll make a good shelf or whatever ends up getting, you know, planted inside it.
Yeah, which is awesome to see, you know. And even like I was talking to another guy who will bring on the show here soon, is like some of those little renovations, man, that like for some of the smaller contractors, like your typical GC just won't touch, right? Is like putting in a bathroom and putting up a wall, right? Like some of these little guys like can get in there, do it, you know, be great at it and move on, versus all the standing up of, and like in a commercial space where like a, you know, like you guys to start up a project, you know, it's going to cost you 10 grand, which is more than the renovation that it costs to do, you know, itself, just because you got all the paperwork, you got all the setup costs, all that thing to like the contracts to run through, where a lot of these guys, you know, that are good at what they do, you know, you need a wall put up and you need a bathroom, like, you know, that can be done pretty quick and easy.
And there is a huge demand for small projects like that right now. We've gotten away from them. And then frankly, I'm on the look for a smaller scale GC that I can rely on, that I can kind of feed these projects to, you know, as a good faith gesture to the people who are calling me, wanting me to do it, but then also to help kind of keep these guys moving, because it's like every day, and it's gotten to the point, you know, I'm glad we're here, but we just can't look at that size of a project anymore. We don't have the efficiency, we don't have the capability right now, or the capacity rather. So, but it's everywhere, man. It's good to see. I mean, you know, business is still booming across most facets right now of all industries, and it's cool, because, you know, obviously there was some months there during 2020 where you'd walk outside and you wouldn't see another soul for days, and it was really scary. Like, what you know, wondering what the hell's going to happen to everything. And as long as the politics involved don't turn it all into a flaming pile of shit, it's seemingly on the rebound, or at least, you know, staying pretty static and busy, which is great.
I think most people are over it. Like, I went to a concert this weekend at a brewery, and, you know, like, you could have told me it was 2019, right? Like, no issues, no problems, no questions, just come in. You know, I'm not drinking right now, but like, have beer, sit down, watch the show, right? Like, it's fine. Nobody cared, right? Shake hands,
nice,
all that stuff. So I think, you know, and granted, this is in California, so like, you know, well, like, that's the thing, man. Like, people don't, I think they're over it, you know, and granted, this isn't like San Francisco, but it's, people are over most of the stuff. And, you know, now with the Supreme Court, you know, overturning the business mandate and all that stuff, you know, OSHA is going to be the next one to fall in line on that, to remove their mandates and all that kind of stuff. You know, and then that'll clean up a lot of the construction pieces. And for our industry, you know, it's great that the Supreme Court voted on the side of freedom, but at the same point, it's not for everybody, right? They still mandate it for healthcare workers, which I don't know how that got carved out, but, you know, you can't mandate anything for businesses, and, or, you know, nobody can mandate anybody to do anything, right? When it comes to all the vaccines and whatnot. And, you know, I'm all for that, right? No mandate, it's your choice one way or the other. Now if OSHA gets in line too, we'll be, you know, on a better track.
Yeah. And unfortunately, they're usually a harder nut to crack. You know, they kind of have a mind of their own sometimes. And, you know, I can't say too much because we're on record here, but they don't really have rules they have to follow. You know, they can kind of make them as they choose. And it's unfortunate that we've, as an industry, we've allowed that to happen. Now, they serve a purpose, or they did, absolutely, you know, but I think we've talked about job site safety for, I don't know how many shows over the last year. And, you know, there's a give and take, there's a balance you have to have between being overly controlling as a entity like they are, and letting things kind of happen, you know, letting the people do what the people will do. I'm 100% against them vaccine mandates or mandates of any kind. You know, it's just it'll be a tough one. I don't think it's going to be a fast battle with OSHA.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see how it works out. I mean, because it's now illegal, right? You cannot mandate it. And the Supreme Court for sure overrides OSHA. But it'll just be interesting to see how quick their rule changes happen.
Right. Right. For sure. But it's good progress. You know, I don't want to get into a philosophical debate today, but it's good progress, because forcing something like that on anybody is just, it's bad form. It's not good for America. It's not good for business. You just can't do it.
Well, and I mean, you see the growth, right? So going back and looking at this, right? Arkansas, West Virginia, those are not blue states. You know, like, that's where these are getting put. These steel mills are getting put, or in places, you know, and people forget, living in their condos in New York City or San Francisco or LA, like, they're not made of mud and clay, man. Like, those are steel buildings, you know, in San Francisco, they might lean a little bit, but they're made of steel. You know, like, they're built on sand, but whatever, like, they are steel buildings, which the Millennium Tower is still leaning, but all those things are, it's steel, like, and that steel is, you know, you're pulling ore and iron out of the ground, you know, you're putting it through a furnace that takes, and all these are arc furnaces, so you got to get electricity somewhere. Most of these are in coal producing areas like West Virginia, so your electricity to now run the coal plant, or to run the steel mill, is, it's coal powered from electricity, not coal burning in the plant, but still, you're just burning coal somewhere else to make steel to then ship it to build a building. And this is, again, you gotta know where things come from, but they're not putting a steel plant in San Francisco, you know?
Yeah, right. It's cool to watch it happen. It's cool to, you know, you turned me on to the marine tracking app. And in the last year, I've kind of geeked out on these big ass Great Lakes steam freighters. And it's amazing just to watch these things because, A, they're just enormous, you know, 1,000-foot long vessels. And especially as of late, you know, these things are finally coming in to whatever the hell they call it, sit down for the winter. And they're driving through, you know, 3 feet of ice. And they've got these little tugboats with sharpened bows that are running around in front of them. I know I'm getting off track, but it's cool to watch them and to like the commerce that is generated through that and to see how those shipping routes actually work. And yes, granted, I'm here in Michigan. We're surrounded by them. So it's pretty easy to go and look at it or whatnot. But it's just a cool thing to really kind of dig your head into. And I've been completely geeking out over the last little while on it. And it's interesting.
And I think, like, to that point, over the last 2 years, it's been really cool and really interesting to see more people understand, like, logistics, transportation, right? Now that trucking, like, finding drivers, right? And that's coming to the forefront. Like, USA Today had an article on driver shortage. You know, like, there's a lot of stuff that when it comes to transportation, logistics, where stuff's made over the last 2 years that, you know, a lot of stuff's been exposed. And, like, where do we actually get most of the stuff that we use? Right? How does it come here? Right? The ports are, quote, shut down, but it's really, we don't have enough drivers to go and get stuff to pull it out of the ports, you know, and that's a problem. So you start to really, like, peel the onion a little bit and, like, how do things happen, right? To the point of you getting a steel building, right? 52 weeks, 54 weeks, you know, so a year and 2 weeks, like, to get something. It's just insane. But now people are more, I think, aware. If you've been paying any sort of attention to just transportation, logistics, how do things move? Where do we get them from? You know, how quick, you know, can we stand up manufacturing in the US? And there was a lot of things that did get stood up very quickly to produce, like ventilators and all the other things, medical devices, medical equipment within the US. You know, do we have enough? No. But, you know, again, that's where all you guys come in the construction industry, is to build all this infrastructure to run the rest of the show.
Yeah, without a doubt. It's got to take a clear and concerted effort on everybody's part. And, you know, from the ownership level to the laborer level, it's keeping all of us busy and it's keeping all of us employed, but we got to keep continuing to build better, right? You got to constantly be looking for ways to boost efficiency or get creative, because as we've seen in the last, you know, almost 2 years, the shit can go south real fast. And you have two choices at that point. You can either sit on your hands and, you know, get fat watching Netflix and just hope it all goes away, or you think outside the box and you figure out a way to solve these challenges. And we've seen that a lot, whether it's springing up buildings for ventilators or, you know, any of it. The, you know, Nucor and US Steel are thinking somewhat outside the box. They're charging forward. Like, it's an uncertain future. It always is, right? But when you see groups like that pushing from the front, I think it makes it easier for us little guys to feel more confident in doing our part to push, you know, and to keep things moving and to keep trying to grow and gain efficiencies that way.
It goes to the whole point, like, you know, everybody listening, right? You're looking to get better. It's the only reason you listen to podcasts, is to get better, to find a nugget, to find something here or there that's going to help you move forward. That's, you don't find anybody, unless you listen to some silly podcast or some show recap or whatever. Like, most people that listen to podcasts are looking to get better. And just by doing that, you're showing that you're one of the few actually out there that wants to get better and improve. And over the last 2 years, you can see people that have taken their health seriously. You can see people that have taken their businesses seriously. You can see everybody that used the, quote, downtime to improve, to work on systems, to stand up better processes, to do more, to write a book, to something, right? Like, they did something to get better and improve both personally and professionally. And you'll see that across, like, multiple areas. Or you see the people that didn't do anything, right? To your point of sitting on the couch and get fat, lazy, and watch Netflix, right? Like, there's that you fall into one of two camps. You either got better or you got worse. And that's frankly what you see. And this time just exacerbated the growth of people because they had the time to focus and put in processes and implement systems, or, you know, focus on their health. Or you had the people that didn't do anything and they're always going to use some excuse in all that. But you can clearly see it across everything.
For sure, man. And that's a good segue to talk about, you know, we've been asking for people to come on the show and to write in or contact us if they wanted to be on it. You know, in one fell swoop through a post you made on Facebook, we're going to be booked out for almost the entire year with guests who were in that first group, right? The people who wouldn't take no for an answer, who wouldn't just sit on their ass getting fat, and who took chances, who figured it out, who pivoted. I mean, some of these people did drastically different things than they were used to and found success. And I am absolutely excited for this year, this show, because it's going to be inspiring on a lot of levels.
Yeah, man, I've had so far like 7-8 conversations, book guests out, and it's just insane. Talking to most all these guys, like they've in the last 2 years alone, 3-4x revenue. It's just been incredible to see some of these guys and their growth. You know, you'll hear many of these stories coming up on, you know, what they did, what systems, processes they implemented, maybe some pivots that they took through the last 2 years, and really just the growth that they had by putting in the work, doing it, and pushing forward when, you know, people might have been hesitant to take some action. So I'm, dude, in all the conversations I've had to book everybody and get everybody through, like it's exciting to just hear what everybody's up to. And I'm trying not to like dig too much into these stories so that we save something good for the show. But it's cool just hearing people, you know, that are kicking ass and taking names, you know, through and through.
Absolutely, man. I'm looking forward to having them on.
So with that, guys, again, big moves are being made by big players, right? You got $6 billion in steel being put up here that'll be done over the next 3 years for these massive plants. You've got some freedom with SCOTUS. Granted, it's not fully there, but the Supreme Court knocking down the mandates. And at the end of the day, you know, the more personal responsibility you can take for everything that you're doing, the better off you're going to be. Again, looking across the industry, looking across just people that you see on social media, you can see which camp they fall in. It's either better or worse, or taking personal responsibility or not. And, you know, we fall in the camp of own everything, right? Extreme ownership. And the more you can do that, the better off you're going to be. That, Matt, any final closing words?
I'm going to say it again. We got a fee now on the show. We're not charging you money, but we are asking you to share it, like it, tell your friends and neighbors and coworkers, push it around. This is going to be a big year and we want to keep the momentum going. So help us out and we'll keep doing the show.
Yeah, guys. And we don't run ads. Matt and I really do this out of a labor of love and you know, betterment of the industry. Like talking to so many of these guys today, you know, this will be probably their first podcast. This is going to be the thing to share their story. And so often in construction, you know, we're isolated. We're not talking to other people. And this is our way of doing that, you know, without, you don't have to, you know, be crazy about it. You don't have to share secrets, but, you know, we're going to do that for you. So share the show. You know, we're going to talk about the industry and you're not alone in any of the stuff you're going through. And the more that people hear shows like this about construction, about our industry, the better we're all going to be. And again, just to know that the things that you go through, the struggles that you have on the job sites, the problems that you might encounter with teams and all that, you know, from plugging holes in your boat, like Matt talked about last week, like this is what we're here to help you guys do, to make all of us better across the industry. And, you know, again, make sure that you know that you're not the only one dealing with the situations that you have going on. And I think far too often in construction, we feel isolated and siloed, and we don't want that for any of you.
Absolutely. We're it's fun for us to come out and bullshit about this, but there's a deeper reason for it, right? We could be doing other things right now and making money, but this is our shot. This is our effort at making our industry better. So follow along as we do it and help us out.
So that's going to be this episode of the Construction Corner podcast. Thanks for being on for a full year, Matt, and joining me on this ride and for
years thanks for to having come me.
Here. Yeah, man. So guys, that's the show and we'll see you right back here next week.